I'm Brian McCreath. I'm at Tanglewood with Kirill Gerstein, who is the 2018 Koussevitzky artist at Tanglewood. Kirill, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here with you.
So what I've noticed in your late schedule, the schedule you've had most of this last season, is a very heavy preponderance of Rachmaninoff and Gershwin. You're sort of, a lot of both of them show up. Your Gershwin CD just came out, and so you're doing some Gershwin here at Tanglewood for Tanglewood on Parade, but you're doing Rachmaninoff in the evening concert tonight. So is there a relationship between those composers that you feel, or is it more of a sense of is it more coincidence that you were simply requested to play a lot of Rachmaninoff and Gershwin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it fluctuates, and actually every season I play about 20 different concerti, so I try to keep a very broad repertoire in my hands. And actually here at Tanglewood, I'm enjoying the program laid out for me this summer, because the trip here, or the residence here, started with playing Tom Addis's In 7 Days, which is his extant piano concerto for large orchestra and soloist. And then we did the two piano recital with Tom, and that had Stravinsky and Debussy and Ravel, and of course Thomas Addis himself. And now something so very popular, Rachmaninoff second, and perhaps the most one of the most known works in the repertoire, the Rhapsody in Blue. Whether there is a relationship between Rachmaninoff and Gershwin, I think clearly Gershwin admired Rachmaninoff, and I think in some parts of the Rhapsody or the concerto, there is this kind of moment of Gershwin saying, "Look, I can do like Rachmaninoff, I can do like Tchaikovsky." The young, talented, brilliant composer that he was. And we know that Rachmaninoff, for example, attended the premiere of the Rhapsody in Blue and was very impressed. I mean, so was Schoenberg, was a great friend and admirer of Gershwin, so on and so forth. So I think it's more which aspects of my past season one concentrates on. There's been Rachmaninoff, but there's been Schoenberg, there's been Addis, there's been Gershwin. The CD is definitely something that has been accented with David Robertson, St. Louis Symphony, and that's an all Gershwin CD. So a lot of varied music, and I think that's what is so lucky for us, especially as pianists, that we have this incredible library of great works that we can constantly turn to.
It is. It's a huge range of music that pianists have at their disposal, which is a really great thing. But I also I wonder, within that range, growing up and getting started as a professional, where did Rachmaninoff really play for you as a presence? Not so much, how much music did you know or play, but what as a presence within the wider range of composers, where did he sort of I don't want to say rank, but where did he sort of sit with you as in terms of his importance to your own sense of musicianship?
Well, growing up in Russia or Soviet Union at the time, Rachmaninoff was certainly a towering musical figure. Composer, pianist. I think he remains one of the very greatest pianists ever recorded, playing our instrument. And of course, the music is incredible in so many ways, and obviously beloved for its sense of melody and its sort of smoky harmonies. I think pianistically also quite important for my own development, because it's a certain way of having to touch the piano that this music dictates, that Rachmaninoff's music dictates. So I think that shapes one's hands and body in some way, by engaging with it. And in some way, Russian culture, even when I was growing up, was still quite permeated by both by Rachmaninoff and by the origins of Rachmaninoff, you know, sort of Chekhov and Tolstoy, and the sense of late 19th century, early 20th century Russia, that both are Rachmaninoff's roots, but also sort of then it has become linked in a sensorial way. And so, for example, I remember as a child singing in a choir, singing the Vespers of Rachmaninoff, which is one of the most beautiful of his works. So yes, it's he's a figure that's very dear to me, and one that I have incredible admiration for. And I think finally the quality that I would single out is his nobility and sincerity in music, because it's again going out of fashion, which is quite good news. But for a long time, I think there was a certain faction of musical critics and sometimes audiences with a certain sort of skepticism that it's too beautiful, it's too sensuous, it's so over the top. First of all, when he plays himself, you hear it's not over the top. So that's more the fault of the performers. But whatever I think he put down on the page was incredibly sincere and incredibly noble. So so yes, this was a man with grand feelings and grand sense. And I think that's something that comes through in music and something that I believe.
And you just referenced the fact that that you hear him in recordings. And so I wonder, especially as you've worked on the second piano concerto, how much those recordings of him really affect what you think and how you approach this particular piece.
Well, I think, first of all, in a good sense, they're unavoidable, because so this generation, Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky, through his conducting, Bartok, even though we have not as much as we perhaps wish to in terms of his performances, though there's quite a bit, this becomes like an additional important document as a supplement to their notation. And so I think it's very important to study these recordings. These are greatest teachers. On the other hand, it's absolutely inimitable what Rachmaninoff does. So I think it can serve as an inspiration and a certain direction in which you can try to aim in, but one can't. It's a recipe for failure to try to imitate it, because it's really not possible to imitate. But I sort of only half jokingly say that I return to Rachmaninoff's recordings periodically, you know, sometimes once in a few months, sometimes once a year, sometimes I don't hear something for a couple of years and I hear it again. And I must say, every time I come back to his recordings, he's playing better and better. It's incredible. So by this I mean also that it's so rich in content, the way he plays, that it not only withstands repeated hearings, but it really grows ever more impressive to my mind and ear, because when I come back, I notice, oh, and this is that, and there's another layer, and there's this implication, and this rubato is even more refined than I thought the last time around. So he plays better and better every year.
That's fantastic. And I guess what that really speaks to, though, in all seriousness, is that your continued evolving as a musician, as you return to that reference point, it sounds like you just gain more and more as you continue to grow, that you see what he does in those recordings as something really valuable to continue to point you in that direction.
Yeah, that's the positive view. That's nice of you. But But it is true that coming back to these pieces, now not less about the recordings per se, but coming to the back to these pieces serve as a kind of steady reference point to one's evolution as a musician, as a person. And so these pieces also remind me, so I know where I was when I learned this page, or what was happening, or you know, when I played this 5 years ago, I had this feeling here, and now this sounds differently to me. So this is, it's like a time capsule slash mirror for oneself when you encounter these great masterworks.
Fantastic. When you learned that you would be the Koussevitzky artist this summer, which is a designation that gives you a lot more opportunity here at Tanglewood to do lots of things. You know, what it's come down to is that you're playing with a BSO. You've played, as you mentioned, Tom's music with TMCO. You'll be on Tanglewood on Parade, and the recital that you did with Tom. So I guess with all that lineup now as the reality, what did your mind first go to as what you thought, well, this will be great to try this out at Tanglewood? What was the first thing that came to your mind as a possibility for being the Koussevitzky artist?
Well, I think it kind of came together gradually, and of course the this offering of the lovely designation was just a great thrill and honor, and I have a lot of sort of sentimental connection to Tanglewood, because when I first came to this country, I went to Boston to study at Berkeley, and my first contact, not in the jazz world, but in the classical world in the United States, was Ralph Gomberg, the legendary oboist of the Boston Symphony, who became sort of a mentor and a dear friend. And then through him, I was too young to go to TMC in 95, but in 95, I went to BUTI, to the Boston University Tanglewood Institute. So, you know, this was Boston Symphony is the first great American orchestra that I heard live, and then I was here studying, and so these impressions of being, you know, 15, 16 here, this is constitutes a very deep connection, and then of course through the years I'm again so delighted and honored that the Boston Symphony feels more and more like so true friends or musical family, and in that sense it's great to be here in this capacity this summer. I think the first thing about the summer that got planned was the Addis in 7 days, and that of course has this connection that we did in 7 days in Boston Symphony Hall in 2012, and there was the origin of the upcoming project, which is the new piano concerto that Tom is writing for the Boston Symphony and I, which will be premiering in March at Symphony Hall and then taking to Carnegie Hall later that month. And so there's a great connection there, and so this was something that was immediately on the list of things that we wanted to do, and of course Tom was curating this year's Contemporary Music Festival, so it all came together. And apropos BUTI, Ken David Mazur, who is conducting Rachmaninoff and the rest of the program this evening, he and I met at BUTI in 95, I think. So, and actually, believe it or not, we've never worked together until now. So I think at the time he was studying composition, and then later he got a degree in singing with Thomas Kvasthoff in Berlin, and then he also turned to conducting. So we've known each other through the years, sort of fading in and out. But now it's the first time that we play together, which is also a very nice coincidence.
Absolutely. And I was actually even doing the math as you were talking and thinking, wait a minute, Ken was at BUTI. Was that the same year? And so that's really cool that really was the same year that you were there.
That's where we know each other from.
Yeah. And I also had no idea that Ralph Gomberg was so important to in your life. And I knew the basics of coming to Berkeley and I knew you were at BUTI, but that's really wonderful.
Ralph was very, very dear to me. I had coachings with him and played for him. And actually through him, I met Tony Fogg here at the Boston Symphony and Dan Gustin at the time here, and then later at the Gilmore Festival. So for me, many paths in some way lead back to Boston and to Tanglewood.
And as is the case with so many people, but certainly for you, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And this actually on Sunday, this is slightly on a sadder, more poignant note, but we've added a piece I will play, Olli Nassen's Ophelia's Last Dance, which is a piece that he wrote for me, and it's one of his last pieces, a very beautiful solo piano work, about 11, 12 minutes. And since Olli left, but the music luckily stays, so it's been a running thread through this summer's program to have as many pieces of Olli played. And so I'm very glad that there's a chance to play it in the beautiful Ozawa Hall.
Yeah, yeah. And I do remember that 2012 performance at the Hall with Thomas of In 7 Days. And you, as mentioned, you did a solo, duo recital with Tom. And you mentioned the concerto that's coming up that he's writing. And I just wonder, you seem to have a lot of chemistry with him as performer and as composer. And I just wonder if there's a way you can sort of encapsulate what it is about Tom that really fascinates you with his music and with working with him. What's different about working with Tom compared to working with kind of anybody else that you might as a composer or as a conductor or piano collaborator?
Yeah. Well, in some way, I can say no need to compare, and he is incomparable because he, and also it will be difficult to encapsulate because it's difficult to encapsulate anything that's as rich and complex of a phenomena as Thomas Addis is. But I would say I get this sense with his music that he is so, it's so 360 degree view of music and music history, in the sense that he can easily and without inhibition refer to things from the past, because his music is both very original, fresh, and say new and forward looking, and in some ways very novel, and in other ways, in the best sense, it's very traditional and rooted in so the things that have come before, from Baroque music to Schumann and Strauss and Bartok and whatever else you want to name. So therefore the music is also something that feels very rich. His music is something that's very rich to engage with. So in comparison to playing in 2012, when I thought, what a great piece In 7 Days is, now I think, it's even more excellent than I thought before. And it draws me, it's actually addictive to practice, because, this could be done better, and maybe this can be so clearer, and this can be brought out more. So, which is, I think, those are all characteristics of great works by anybody. And then, of course, he's terribly impressive with, he can conduct, he obviously writes music, he knows all the pieces that one refers to in a conversation, and you know, immediately starts saying original and interesting things about it. And then, of course, he plays the piano in a sort of non-obligatorily excellent way, because you know it's not something that he's so constantly doing or constantly is compelled to practice, because he has better things to do, like write great pieces for us. So so all in all, he's just incredibly impressive and inspiring sort of musical being, so composer, conductor, pianist, and he's one of these people where you'll sit and you'll be looking at the same, say, object in the room, and 30 minutes later he'll say something that's from a completely different angle that one is likely to pass. So it's a very original mind. So it's just incredibly interesting to be with him, and so it's an I count it as a great honor. The other day on the stage in Ozawa Hall, as we were playing his paraphrase for two pianos, and I thought, what could be better? I'm playing this wonderful piece with the composer himself, and this is really, it feels very special.
That's great. And by the way, we struggle to encapsulate everything about Tom on the radio too. It's hard to get the complete picture of Tom.
You know, in this era of sort of packaging in 140 or now 280 characters or whatever else, that so some things don't fit, thank God, into these small sound bites and packageable units, because the thing is simply too large in the best sense. And I think Tom is like that, and that's wonderful that we can't either encapsulate or break it down to sort of a simple explanation. It's a long and complex one, and so be it.
That's right, the beauty of complexity. You're right. Well, Kirill Gorstein, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with me. I really appreciate it this morning.
Thank you.